Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast. Your backstage pass to revealing conversations with stars, creators, and industry leaders. On Broadway, off Broadway, and beyond. I'm Gordon Cox. One of my favorite TV shows of the last several years was Reservation Dogs, the ensemble comedy about a group of kids on a Native American reservation in Oklahoma. The show's co-creator and four of its writers were all members of the intertribal sketch comedy troupe The 1491s. And at the same time that Reservation Dogs was being developed, The 1491s were also premiering their first play. Now that play, Between Two Knees, is having a run at the new Perlman Performing Arts Center in New York City. Commissioned by the Oregon Shakespeare Festival as part of its American Revolutions series of new plays about American history, Between Two Knees is a wild comedy that traces multiple generations of one Native American family from the Wounded Knee Massacre in 1890 to the American Indian Movement's occupation of Wounded Knee in 1973. Two of the play's writers, Reservation Dogs co-creator Sterling Harjo and fellow 1491 member Bobby Wilson, are in the virtual studio with me to talk making comedy, making theater, and the great American drama that Harjo wants to make the next time he writes for the stage.
Hi, Sterling and Bobby. Thanks for joining me.
What's up?
Hello.
So before we talk about Between Two Knees and how that came about, I wonder if you could just give us a quick little bit of background about how all of you in the 1491s met and started making comedy together.
It was a cloudy day. Thunder struck.
It was a cloudy day. I was in Santa Fe when Bobby met us, or when Bobby met me.
Yeah. Well, actually, when I met Ryan Redcorn, I met you later. Well, I met y'all at the same time.
Yeah.
But you have that thing. And Redcorn has that thing in his mind that makes him, you know, he trusts people right when he sees them. So,
right. Ryan brings a lot of bad people into our life that way. But in this case, he brought someone good, which was Bobby. But, you know, Ryan and I had been... This is all kind of simultaneously happening. We're like, Ryan and I had been making films. I was an independent filmmaker. Ryan was in my film, Barking Water. Mm-hmm. I cast Ryan because I heard him tell a funny story and I wanted him to be in the movie. Mm-hmm. And then we were in Santa Fe Indian Market and we met Bobby. And Bobby was kind of bumming around and like carrying a graffiti pin, just like tagging shit everywhere. And kind of half homeless, it seemed like. And somehow everyone ended up staying. I was the only one that was supposed to be there. Mm-hmm. But as Indians do, I ended up like having like six people staying in my hotel. Mm-hmm. And
one of them was
Bobby. I end up getting like, I ended up coming back to my hotel like 1 a.m., maybe 2. And Bobby and Dallas are in my bed, or Bobby and Ryan are in my bed. And I was like, fuck, like, and I just briefly met Bobby that day. And anyway, I just made him scoot over and the three of us slept together the first night. So it's really how this was forged.
Okay.
And then at the same time, so Bobby was living in Minneapolis at the same time. Migazy and Dallas had been making funny videos. Ryan and I had been making some little videos on the side that weren't that funny because Ryan, you know, he's not that funny until we made him funny. But he was really into earnest poetry at the time. And I was just like, let's do some cool shit, you know? And I wasn't making a lot of money as an independent filmmaker, as you do. But they wanted to show my film in Minneapolis. And I asked Ryan if he wanted to go. And then we could link up with Migazy Dallas, do some funny videos. And then Bobby was there too. And we were like, well, our new friend Bobby. And Dallas and Bobby happened to know each other. Mm-hmm. We needed a place to film the video. It ended up being where Bobby worked.
Was there any inclination toward theater or writing a play before you started to work on? Yeah. And so
we didn't know that was possible. We didn't know it was possible. We were commissioned to do it. Mm. And we were like, I guess we're doing this now because there's no other way to make money.
Yeah.
And
this was
we'd been doing like stage on tour for like a decade at this point.
Right.
Made a bunch of videos on YouTube, but we were probably making like 45 a year if we were lucky, you know, kind of breaking even. So it was nice, but then we got the commission and had no idea that those existed out there. And Oregon Shakespeare Festival hooked it up super hard. They knew we had never written a play before, but they were very familiar with our combined work as well as our individual work. And Allison Carey, who used to work there, flew out to Tulsa, Oklahoma to see one of our fabulous live shows for the people of Tulsa Town.
And was the commission with, was it sort of free range, like create something?
Like we ended up getting flown out to the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. It was beautiful.
Which is a beautiful place.
We sort of, we'd never done plays, but we got to immerse ourselves and watch plays while we were writing this thing. And I don't think they expected us to do as much as we did. And basically the first day of working, we sat around in a classroom and drew dicks on a dry erase board for half the day. And we also like were making a video for a Kickstarter for a feature film that we wanted to make. That's what we did our first day. And then, but like the last, like maybe the next day or the last hour of that first day, I think that we really buckled down and like came up with an outline. And so we already had the play outlines like day one or two. And we just were watching plays. It was a pretty great experience.
There was a thing about it too, like, so it was through the American Revolutions Commission that went on for quite some time. I can't say how long, but
Several years through the Oregon Shakespeare Festival.
And they did this thing where they would bring all of their commissioned playwrights together in New York for like a day or two just to say hello, talk about what they're working on. And we were blown away by how many people had this really amazing commission and had done nothing with it for like 10 years, some of them. They were just sitting around. And, you know, we're five of us. We've been making these sort of guerrilla videos on reservations all across the land for a decade. And we were like, why are you guys taking so long? Like, this is fun. Like, just, you know, get it going. And Oregon Shakespeare Festival, I mean, holy shit, what a beautiful campus. It's like a goddamn Garden of Eden, you know? I mean, you know, it used to be when the Indians had it. Now, it's pretty nice what the white folks have done with it, with that theater and everything.
And how was the process of putting that play together, how was that different from working on the sketch comedy? Or was it very similar, did you find?
Well, the differences were, like, the structuring of this piece. But I would say the way that we came up with each of those scenes was very similar to the process that we had been using for years of like doing it on the fly, you know, kind of seeing what's funny to us, what sticks. And then we really got to build out the drama shit. That was what was so different about us working together in that capacity, was really building out and humanizing people in these dramatic ways, you know, that I don't want to spoil.
I think that everyone besides me was pretty afraid of drama because I'd like been making fucking dramas, you know. Also, like, we were very much sort of a balance and check for each other, because like writing it, like all of our strengths and weaknesses we worked with, and you know, like left to my own devices, like it's more like Res Dogs for me, where there's a lot of brooding and humor, but like, you know, it can go longer and that might not work for a play. So like they, you know, these guys would help go, we need some jokes in here, you know, or like, this is too sad or whatever. Or vice versa. We would all, you know, we all kind of work like that anyway. And fill in gaps when needed, but like, but you know, we did it just like we did sketches. I mean, we just threw out ideas and it's kind of one big workshop, you know. And like the last thing that happens is like we actually write stuff down.
I was just gonna ask how and when does that happen? Is that one of you who sort of takes it all and or like watches and writes stuff down, or how does the actual script...
when we first did it, I mean, we had a dry erase board for the outline
with the dicks.
And when we first did it, I think we assigned each other sections of the play. And then it would go through Bobby or Megazy, kind of a overall sort of like kind of helping make it cohesive, you know, like get filtered through where one person can kind of attach the pieces together and sort of like, you know, make sure it flows.
And that process was sick too, though, on the rehearsal side, like all the space that OSF.
Bobby did a lot of that.
Working alongside Eric and the cast and
the director,
team, like every, the whole thing was fantastic. Getting to do the rewrites, seeing what works in the room. Theater is crazy. It's crazy. Everybody's doing this, you know, and like for those runs, especially like at OSF, shit.
Yeah.
Thing was like 3 month runs,
yeah,
on it, and some of those actors were in other plays as company actors, you know. That was mind-blowing that they could pull all that shit off, you know. Rachel Crowell, god dang, like she went into this Shakespeare one, and this is how, you know, I wish I could tell you which one it was. I want to say Twelfth Night, but I don't want to misquote it, but
oh, it was Henry V. We went and watched her in Henry V, and she destroyed, and we were like, we gotta cast her, like somehow we gotta figure out a way to cast her.
I'll have more with Sterling and Bobby right after the break.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
Welcome back to my conversation with Sterling Harjo and Bobby Wilson, two of the writers of Between Two Knees.
Was the larger story something that emerged as you put together that group of scenes, or was it something that you went in with the arc and then you kind of broke it down into two scenes?
I mean, one of the things that we had structurally, we were coming, because we were supposed to have to do with history.
Right.
And we were kind of, you know, fucking around with like what parts of history should we hit, you know? And and then I forget what we were watching. I think it might have been this play that was like some country bumpkin play that I walked out on because I was like offended, and Bobby and them were just like, oh, this is great, man. And
really, this is your people. We're gonna stick around.
But before I left, I remember thinking somehow like Between Two Knees came in my head, and I ran up to them and I was like, maybe we should call it Between Two Knees, because we've been talking about the wounded knee and whatever, but it was like making it in between two knees. Wounded knee experiences could be a cool, it was a cool like structure, but also like a challenge, and like it gave us parameters on what we could say and what we couldn't say, I guess.
And it made us read a bunch of history shit. Oh my god, all that reading.
Right.
Yeah. Do you, and the play makes some comedy out of some, you know, really dark things, these super dark moments in the country's past. And do you, and of course, a lot of your sketch work is like fueled by activism and pointing out injustice and all that stuff. Do you have a kind of philosophy of how comedy works to kind of affect change, either like in the people watching or in the systems around them, or like what, how do you think about how you take on like dark things and serious things with comedy?
I mean, I think that we all have different opinions on that, you know, and our strength as a group is our different opinions come together and work together. I don't have a philosophy on it. There's something about telling the truth that is like, you know, cuts through everything. I will say that like on the road, what we did develop sort of a philosophy, not a philosophy, but like a way in, because we would bomb with white audiences, and or like more northern white audiences, you know, like some, for some reason, like southern whites like us or got the humor, but like we noticed that like they were afraid to laugh. And like, I think that has to do with like the idea that Native Americans are precious or whatever, you know? And like, so we had to give them, we realized we have to give them permission to laugh. So we started coming out in our intros and like making fun of ourselves and like really kind of getting them warmed up so they're ready to laugh. And also kind of teaching them Native humor. And that's, it's what Judd's character, the narrator, plays in, like Larry is in play. Yeah. You know, he is the person that kind of welcomes everyone in and shows you what Native humor is. And like, it's okay to laugh. Similar to Reservation Dogs, Dallas's character who plays Spirit, same function. So like, that is a philosophy right. that I think we learned, not just about history, how to talk about history, but how to also just like, share our humor, you know, that was one that we learned just on the road failing at it.
Bobby, do you have anything to add?
I mean, you know, you're talking about activism. I don't know. I it's funny because working together as five of us, there is a whole spectrum of that activism. You know, Dallas Goldtooth very much in the social media side of activism, very, you know,
the annoying.
Yeah. I'm also like showing up in person to places and wearing his cute little outfits and getting arrested and stuff, you know. Yeah, getting arrested.
Yeah.
Dallas got arrested in DC recently doing something and he was released before the footage hit the internet, like before it was posted.
Right.
And so we were going to make t-shirts that just said free dot D-A-L dot dot.
Yeah. They'll texting us back.
Yeah. How have you found, you were talking about audiences responses when you were on the road. How have you found theater audiences as being sort of receptive to humor? Are they different at all from the folks who would come see your touring shows?
Yeah. I mean, in Oregon, it was pretty good because we were challenging them, I think, and it was like very polarized. You know,
that was sort of the intention, and, you know, at least a lot of it when we went into the play, because you know, all this work that we've done over the years, we've been to every res that exists as a team. And the entertainment, the art that we were creating was largely for just Native folks, you know, and theater spaces are definitely not for Native folks. It's like quite the opposite, really, you know. a lot of wine drunk older whites, you know. No, not knocking them, you know, they're here to have a good time, I get it, but shit, like a lot of that stuff's inaccessible,
right? You know,
I got to see Shakespeare stuff when I was a kid because my elementary school or my middle school, etc. would make the trip, but really then you look at the ticket prices and you're like, dang, like nobody I grew up around is going to, you know, be able to afford this. That's why we got to hook up those Indian tickets, though, you know?
And so how did you think about coming into this space? Did that, like, affect the kind of story you were telling or how you told the...
Yeah. Well, it affected how we told the story. The story is the story of Indians, at least our five memories, how it happened.
Right.
But a lot of the humor comes from acknowledgement of where we're at, you know, and who's most likely in the crowd. Not to say that we wrote exclusively for, you know, those folks, because there's, you know, a bunch of Indian jokes in there too.
Right.
I think we were like writing for a Native audience, what we would want to see, but also like knowing that we're letting a lot of non-natives in to see this. And it's like, how do we have it's almost a conversation with non-natives, like expressing what we are and who we are and the humor and how fucked up the history is, you know, like in a weird way. Reservation Dogs was very much for Native people. Like, and if other people come, cool. Yep. This was more like, we're going to challenge non-Native audiences because that's who is going to see this, you know, like we have to do something, we have to talk to them, and we do throughout the play, I think.
Speaking of Reservation Dogs, where were you on the journey of making Reservation Dogs as you were working on this play?
actually sold Reservation Dogs while right before the play opened, like the day of, I think, and got the call that day and was just like, holy shit, got this show called Reservation Dogs. And everyone was like, great, congrats. You know, we were just doing the play that day. It was crazy.
And so then how did you find, that your experience working on the play informed how you worked on the show?
Yeah, probably. I mean, but like more so 1491's helped informed how I worked on the show, because I was a showrunner and I was running a writer's room now.
Right.
And that's what we did. That's how we wrote our sketches, you know, that's, but it's also how we wrote our play. So like all of that was a very much like a, like kind of, I'm quarterbacking this group of people. And, you know, even when we do our sketches, like I would always be the one, cause I was a lot of times, like, especially in the beginning, like I would be like, you know, with the one with the camera or whatever. Like, so I was always trying to think of the editing process that I had edited for a while at that point. Like, you know, what is our ending? Like, what's our beginning? Like things like that. And so just trying, the nature of trying to keep things to where, like, I guess like quarterbacking a little bit, but like with the 1491s, I don't know. It's funny because all of our dynamics shift. We're like, one day it'll be Bobby leading everything, or one day it'll be Dallas. And when Dallas does it, he does it like we're all students. Like he's got to have a pin and like is leading the class, you know? And then there's Ryan's usually there to just like disrupt everything and make you rethink your life. And then you get like a really cool thing out of what he just did to you and you didn't realize it. And then Mick's very quiet until he has, but you realize he's been pondering this one thing for like 5 hours and then he finally has a solution, you know? Mm-hmm. And, like so in the, with the play, there was like, when we're in a room together, there's so many different dynamics that play out, but that definitely informed how I ran the writer's room for Reservation Dog.
Right. Yeah. And what is it like to come back to the show, to sort of revisit the show now that Reservation Dogs has finished its run?
Well, for me, the different, like the first iteration of Between Two Knees at Oregon Shakespeare Festival was this really pivotal moment, you know, Res Dogs getting sold, Mig going off to be a set, right, like cover set for some major crazy historical drama. Like things were happening that were wild, and you know, all of that energy was going into the writing of this thing.
Right,
fast forward, you know, 2024, whatever year this is now.
and
all of the things that we have learned in the writing process and the rooms and kind of what works, they've made us great editors, I think. So going into the script and working again with Eric Ting and Julie Dubiner, our dramaturg, and having those conversations once again that poured so much magic into that first run, it's been really exciting. And I'm hyped to see what the cast is doing with it and the creative team going back.
I think it's pretty rare. I'm just assuming, I don't know, but like it feels pretty rare to have a cast sort of stick together like that for so long play, you know. It's, that feels, you know, the cast cares about it, but also like just being able to watch that group grow, you know. So pumped to see that. And to and you know, things have changed since Reservation Dogs. Like we all felt it, you know, as we were making it. And it'll be interesting to see now, like maybe audiences are even more sort of primed and ready to, you know, be in an audience and watching a absurd native comedy on stage.
Yeah. Has the script changed at all since 2019? Have you done much tinkering? Or
Yeah. We've moved some stuff around, opened up the opening of Act Two.
Put things, replace things, move things back, put things back in.
Yeah. And we got Ty Defoe too to
choreograph
some crazy shit too. So that's a big difference.
Right. And so the play is gonna be at the Perlman Center in February. And what's
Hellraiser Cube.
Yeah. I've never that is actually kind of what it looks like. You're right. And so what's next for you both? What's coming up next for you?
What next out on that prairie?
Bobby and I have an animation that we're doing. We're hopefully developing with FX, and I think it's going to happen. So
great.
Yeah, there's that. And then Bobby's got other stuff, and I have a new show that I might be doing hopefully at FX as well. Great. And then feature films for me. I definitely want to do some feature films now that people open their door and take a meeting with me about them, you know, now that Dogs has come out. So,
now that you turned down Bambi.
I turned Bambi down. I turned Hot Wheels down.
You could have been the native male Greta Gerwig. You know that? You could have been.
I know, it could have been.
Would you be interested in writing other plays? Like, is theater a thing that you would be interested in circling back to at any point?
I would, for sure.
Yeah,
I would probably make a great American drama, you know, like with some humor. Right. A family thing, you know, like I would want to, you know, I'm going for the Pulitzer here.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, here it is. Oh, yeah, that's the big one, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I got that Peabody,
the Pulitzer. Like the Emmy of writing stuff.
Right. There's the Tonys too. You could go for the Tony. Right. Tony and the
Pulitzer. Oh, EGOT. Yeah, yeah. Oh, EGOT. Yeah. He plays guitar.
Right. Yeah. Really, he plays guitar. Is that what you said?
Really good. Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. All right. Well, thank you both. It was great chatting with you, and enjoy the run of Between Two Knees next month.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you both.
Let us know what you thought. No, I'm just kidding.
I will.
That was Sterling Harjo and Bobby Wilson, two of the members of the 1491s. Their play Between Two Knees runs at the Perlman Performing Arts Center in New York, February 3rd through 24th. Their FX TV series Reservation Dogs wrapped up its third and final season last year. It's on Hulu, and if you haven't watched it yet, I cannot recommend it highly enough. It's great. If you enjoyed this conversation here on Stagecraft, I'd really appreciate it if you took the time to rate and review us wherever you listen to podcasts. It really does help. Or tell a friend about Stagecraft. Find past episodes and subscribe at all the places you get your pods, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and on the Broadway Podcast Network, a great place to find more theater for your ears. Until next episode, find me on Instagram and Twitter at Gordon B. Cox. You can also check out my newsletter about international theater called Jayqueez. It's at gordoncox.substack.com. Thanks for listening, and see you at the theater.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.